The second case for oral argument this morning is Robert Marschke, appellant, versus Nathan J. I believe it's Radishlaw. Appellee for the appellant, Ms. Merrill Woods, an attorney from Rapid City. And for the appellee, Mr. Clint Neal Reagan's, an attorney also from Rapid City. Ms. Woods, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes. Personally inspected the vehicle?
No, he never did personally inspect the vehicle. He went simply on the eBay ad. There was pictures on the ad. I think that's in the record. We have a copy of the ad in the record. He viewed the ad. He viewed the statements of the seller. He contacted the appellee in this matter, inquiring about the vehicle. There were several phone calls back and forth regarding this vehicle. They did agree on a purchase price of the vehicle, and it was at that time that my client sent an initial down payment of $500 as a good faith payment that he's generally interested in purchasing this vehicle. Afterwards, the appellee or a representative of his firm, I'm not quite sure what the record holds on that, emailed my client requesting his phone number and address in order to send the paperwork in order that the sale may go through. My client provided a South Dakota address, which at that time the appellee mailed a purchase agreement contract for my client's signature. When my client received that at his home in Rapid City, he signed it, he mailed it back. He also wired the remaining amount owed on this vehicle from his bank in Rapid City to the seller in Montana. My client then made arrangements to have the vehicle transferred to Rapid City. The appellee in this matter did assist in that matter by providing him the name of a carrier that could transport the vehicle to Billings, Montana, where the appellant's employer's main headquarters is located, and at that time, a co-worker of the appellant's transported the vehicle from Billings to Rapid City. Once received in Rapid City, my client realized the car was not in the condition that had been promised him, and he brought the current action in Pennington County, having the appellee this matter served by the Sheriff's Department at his place of business in Montana.
Do you see any distinction that the solicitation from Montana came over the internet versus otherwise putting an ad in Deals on Wheels?
I think there's a big distinction here. If I'm putting an ad in a local newspaper, I'm going to assume that
Deals on Wheels is a national magazine where you can sell cars.
Okay, I apologize. I'm not familiar with it.
Okay, sorry. But I mean, is there a distinction because we're using the electronic internet versus a publication of any kind that has a national exposure?
I would say no, because you're trying to expand your marketplace. when you put an ad in the local newspaper, you're assuming that it's your local residence where that newspaper is published that are going to see that. If you're putting it in a national publication or an internet website, you're reaching out. You're trying to get beyond that local market.
So am I potentially subjecting myself, if I have this fiat for sale, to be sued in all 50 states?
I would say yes, you are.
Wouldn't there have to be more contacts, though, really, to under the tests that the courts have laid out? There'd have to be more than just putting it on the internet itself, although that may be one of the contacts with that state or the or country. In the case of eBay, this goes to foreign countries. But doesn't there have to be more than that?
I would agree with you that there would be, but in this case, there was a purchase agreement that the seller provided to the appellant in this case. He mailed it to the buyer at his home in South Dakota. It was here where the appellant signed that document and put it in the mail. Now, at that point, he's bound to that contract. He agreed to it. So I would say that there was more than just the placement of that ad that gave the court jurisdiction here in Pennington County.
Now, just a minute, if I understand the evidence correctly, though, the contract wasn't binding when your client signed it in South Dakota because it had not been signed by the other party. It was only after the contract returned to Montana that it was signed by the second party and then became a binding contract. Is that a correct understanding of the record?
Your Honor, it's my understanding that once my client signed it and mailed it back, he was my client's bound by it. It was a unilateral acceptance at that point.
Well, both parties have to sign the contract before it's binding, don't they?
I would say no, because if my client had tried to rescind at that point, he's already signed it agreeing to it. So I would say no, he's bound by it once it's been sent back.
I want to go back to the website advertising. Now, you say your client did not buy this on eBay. As I understand it, your client went to the website for this seller, Montana Muscle, went to that website and looked at the car and got the phone number there. Is that right?
He went to the eBay auction website looking for this particular vehicle.
Right. But then I understand that's where he started his search, but didn't he end up... When he got the phone number for Montana Muscle, as I understand it, he got it from Montana Muscle's website.
Correct.
Okay.
That would be correct.
And so that's okay. So eBay really has nothing to do with this. This is not an eBay transaction. On this Montana Muscle website, was it like if you're familiar with Amazon or any of the other internet sellers, was it a type of thing where you could just click? You know, I purchase this, you know, click what you want and put your credit card in there. And was it that kind of a site, or was it just an advertising site where you could look at what was for sale, but you had to make a phone call in order to proceed?
The eBay site that the appellee had listed, that is the type of site where he could have just...
Right, I understand, but that no transaction was done on eBay, right?
No,
we're talking about, okay,
eBay,
so...
And then he looked at it on the other auction or on the other website. To be honest, Your Honor, I can't answer that. I do know that there were several cars listed on the website. I know the website was maintained by the appellee, but I don't know if anybody could just purchase.
So it's not like, well, I guess what I'm getting at is we all are acquainted with this kind of this virtual store concept where you can go to L.L. Bean or Lands' End or Amazon or any of those things, and you just click, you pick the color and the size you want, and it's just like buying it here in Spearfish. It's a virtual store. Was that the kind of a thing that this was going on here with Montana Muscle, or was it just a site that just had the advertising, and then in order to proceed, you had to make a phone call and go through a contract process?
To my knowledge, he went on the website, not the auction site.
Right.
It wasn't something that he could just click and purchase.
Okay.
Now, Montana Muscle was in the business of selling cars. What if a person, say, was just private, going to sell a clock, and the person in Florida buys it? on the internet. Can you be sued in Florida on a private sale also under your theory, or is there a distinction because Montana Muscle is in the business of selling cars?
I think there's a big distinction here. This wasn't just click and buy. This is something that he had to contact the seller, and the seller sent, the big factor here is the contact, or the appellee sending the contract to the appellant here in South Dakota. I think that is the big thing. He was reaching out in the ads trying to get people in the market all over. But the big thing is here, the other actions that were taken, sending out the contract, the other information that was being passed back and forth between the parties. From my understanding, there was 3 phone calls made between the parties. It wasn't a single transaction.
Okay, say that I'm Montana Muscle and I want to avoid getting sued in any state but Montana. Is there any way I can protect myself?
I would say if you have had a clause in there saying that any litigation is going to be handled in Montana and you make that plainly known on that website, I think that might protect you, but that was not the case here.
By the same token, your client could have hand-wrote on the contract itself, which at that point was just an offer back to the company to buy. I don't agree with you on your unilateral position, but it's just an offer to buy, and your client could have written on there that this is a South Dakota transaction subjecting you to the jurisdiction of South Dakota. Now, I know that's kind of a preposterous example, but your client had the opportunity to do that too, didn't he?
Well, I would say if he had done that, the contract that was sent to my client contained all the terms that they had agreed on the sale of the vehicle as far as my client. My argument would be if my client had amended that contract in any way, he basically would have been given a new offer, not the same offer, to Montana Muscle.
He'd be making a counter offer on his terms, right?
Under his terms.
Correct. And he had the option to do that.
And he had the option to do that.
Okay. But he didn't do it, and instead he sent it back so that it could be signed by the seller of the automobile. So it was a transaction then made there, not in South Dakota, but back where the contract was signed finally.
Okay. My argument would be that Montana Muscle had the opportunity, since they were providing this document, they could have signed it and then mailed it to my client for his signature. They didn't do that. They sent it for him to sign first. So my argument would still be he's bound by it.
How can he be bound by it before the offeror signs it?
Because it's an agreement that they've agreed to on the terms, and he signed his name agreeing to it and mailed it to them for their receipt. Once he placed it in the mail, he had no more control over that contract any longer.
What if they would have refused to sign it?
If they would have refused to sign it, I think they still could have held my client to that contract because his signature was on it.
Who's got the car?
My client.
Okay, is there any difference between jurisdictionally between suing the seller for damages or suing for rescission? Is there any difference jurisdictionally whether your client would have sued the seller for damages and kept the car, or if he'd sued for rescission, saying, I want all my money back, you take the car back?
No, I think he could have brought suit for either purposes here. Because this is, like I said, this is where he had accepted that offer and mailed it back.
You know, what we have to struggle with here, this is a new case for South Dakota, an internet sale, and how we're going to deal with internet sales. What rule do we formulate in the absence of nothing from our legislature on how to do this? What rule do we formulate? And I know that we don't have a rule in South Dakota, but many states have dealt with this issue. And some states go to this virtual store thing and they say, well, if it's like Amazon and there's literally thousands of sales going on in a state, then Amazon could be sued here if they breach the contract. And then you got at the other extreme, you got like in your case, a single sale. And there's no, it's not a virtual store. It's just an advertisement on the internet. So, various courts have used different tests. What tests do you think we should adopt in South Dakota to decide when we would have jurisdiction in these kinds of cases?
Well, I think we've kind of addressed it under our long arm statute as is right now. 57-2 gives jurisdiction to the courts in South Dakota if an out-of-state resident does business in this state, or they do some sort of act that causes an action to occur in the state from which they...
However, the long-arm statute, there's no dispute that it does fall within the long-arm statute, isn't it? Isn't the issue here due process under the Constitution?
Well, the first thing we have to look at is whether the legislature provided for jurisdiction, which I think they have, and then you have to look under due process and whether it would be... Basically, whether the appellee could have foreseen that he would be held in court here in South Dakota. And I think under these circumstances that, yeah, he could foresee that. He mails a contract to South Dakota. My client, and this is in the record, when he first contacted him, he identified himself as a South Dakota resident that he lived here. The money that was received came from a South Dakota bank. So there was a lot of inferences here that he was dealing with South Dakota, not Montana.
Going back to Justice Cunningham's question, you started by answering that the answer, the rule we should apply is the long-arm statute. Justice Meyer Henry pointed out that doesn't apply, due process does. So what's the answer to Justice Cunningham's question? What rule should we apply in South Dakota to satisfy due process in internet sales?
Well, and I think you're going to have to look at them on a case-by-case basis. And the big test is going to be purposeful availment. Did that party purposely avail him to South Dakota? And it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. If someone's purchasing something on Amazon.com, and I believe, I have not used Amazon.com, but I believe Amazon is one that you actually have to sign up to use their service. There's terms and agreements that you have to agree to in order to use their service. And if I'm correct, they specifically state a state where jurisdiction for anything Amazon purchase applies.
All you need is a credit card. Yep.
So in a case like that, I would say it would be the state that is outlined in that terms and services of Amazon. But it wouldn't apply in a case such as this. And that's why I think you need to look at the contacts that were made here to see if South Dakota would maintain jurisdiction. And my argument is, yes, they do.
What did they purposefully avail themselves of South Dakota in this case? Simply by having a website up on the web that says what cars they have and what telephone number you can call if you want to buy one of their cars.
No. When my client contacted him, he identified himself as a South Dakota resident. That there put them on notice. They also mailed documents to seal this deal to South Dakota. That purposely availed it. They also received payment from a South Dakota bank. That there would purposely avail them to this jurisdiction.
You have 2 minutes, counsel.
In summary, I'd just like to say that if you look at all the facts surrounding this case, take out the internet, because this wasn't an internet purchase. Look at the other acts of the appellee in this instance, and I think you would find that he did submit to the South Dakota jurisdiction, so knew he could be held into court here, and it's not unreasonable for him to be in court based on his activities.
Thank you, Ms. Woods. Mr. Riggins, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. Whether or not, there's only one issue in this case, essentially. That's whether or not personal jurisdiction be asserted over this non-resident seller under the due process clause. And whether or not this court chooses to analyze due process under the traditional international shoe model, or whether they choose to develop another type of model dealing with e-commerce that several other states have utilized, the result is the same. There's just simply not enough contact in this case with the defendant seller in the state of South Dakota sufficient to subject him to jurisdiction under due process. South Dakota has adopted a three-part test. This court has for determining whether or not due process is proper. The first prong, which has been labeled the touchstone by a number of jurisdictions, is whether or not there's purposeful availment. The second prong is whether or not the cause of action arose from the defendant's contact with the forum state. And the third prong is whether or not the acts of the defendant have a substantial connection with the cause of action to make exercise of jurisdiction over the defendant reasonable. Now, in terms of purposeful availment, the question that must be asked is whether or not the defendant purposefully availed himself to the state of South Dakota, to the rights and privileges of the state, such that he could anticipate or see some sort of benefit to the rights and protections by South Dakota. And there's a couple different ways to look at purposeful availment. A number of cases in other jurisdictions have looked at purposeful availment in terms of e-commerce. Most of those jurisdictions have developed and adopted a sliding scale test, first set forth in the case of Zippo Manufacturing versus Zippo.com, a Pennsylvania case. And in that case, internet activity is placed on a spectrum. On one end of the spectrum, we have cases that deal with continual business over the internet. Those cases would involve Amazon.com, and another example of that sort of a case would be Zippo.com itself, because in that case, the seller actually was in the business of selling subscriptions to an internet news service, and he had sold 3,000 subscriptions to residents of the state of Pennsylvania. In that case, the court found that jurisdiction was proper because the 3,000 contacts were of such a nature that the people there were continually downloading it.
I read that Zippo case, and that standard really didn't seem to be terribly helpful. What's a sliding scale? At what point does it tip over from no jurisdiction to jurisdiction? It looks like a lot of polish and not a lot of help.
Well, the scale itself is a bit confusing, but one thing that's important is that the courts that have interpreted this scale have really not deviated a whole lot from the international shoe standard.
Yeah, that's what it seemed to me to be, was just going back to the same old standard but giving it a new name.
That is sort of what it's like, but when you kind of view the broad spectrum of the cases that have utilized this sliding scale, it becomes apparent that in instances such as those which involve in middle tier, cases where there's an exchange of information between buyer and seller over the internet, and passive cases on the far end of the spectrum, which is simply a website that provides information that is accessible to anyone over the internet, those cases have analyzed it from a stream of commerce standard, much along the lines of the stream of commerce standard set forth by the plurality opinion and aside by Justice O'Connor. In those cases, they essentially say that the mere placement of a product for advertisement on the internet is not enough. It's likened to placing the product into the stream of commerce. And in those cases, there must be something more. There must be purposeful availment. And so, essentially, it does come down to almost the same test that is available under international shoe. The one thing the courts have noted is that when there's transaction of continual business over the internet, the connections are systematic and continuous and of a nature that it basically gives rise to general jurisdiction. And on the other end of the spectrum, any contact with the forum state is merely random, fortuitous, and isolated, in a sense, because there's no control over who's going to see this information on the web. And so it really doesn't have a whole lot of value in those instances as far as developing minimum contacts with the forum.
Is there any significance to the fact the car is in South Dakota?
At this time, no. I guess the only thing I would find significant would be if the seller would have actually shipped the vehicle to South Dakota, but that wasn't the case. Instead, the buyer actually arranged for shipment, and the vehicle entered South Dakota solely through the actions of the seller.
But now your opponent claims that your client did more and purposely availed itself of the jurisdiction of the state of South Dakota by mailing a unilateral contract to Rapid City and for the client's signature, and then by receiving a South Dakota check from South Dakota Bank, she says that's enough to constitute availment of jurisdiction.
I would completely disagree with that assertion. The mere fact that an unsigned purchase agreement was mailed to the state of South Dakota is in essence the only contact between the seller and the state of South Dakota. And it was an unsigned purchase agreement. It did not bind the seller until he signed the agreement when it was returned to Montana. At the time the seller signed it, it was unilateral, but it wasn't a contract. If the seller would have taken the contract and torn it up upon receiving it, there would be no contract in this case, and we wouldn't have this dispute. And I think the mere fact that the buyer signed it is not enough to give rise to jurisdiction in this case. In addition, when analyzing purposeful availment, both under a sliding scale as well as the traditional standard of international shoe, it's important to remember that it's only the defendant's contacts with the forum that count in this matter. And essentially, as I mentioned, the only contact between the defendant and the state of South Dakota was the mailing of this packet of information along with an unsigned purchase agreement. All other contact in this case was initiated by the seller. The seller witnessed this auction on eBay and immediately contacted the buyer, the other way around, the buyer initiated contact with the seller in this case. He did so from the state of Illinois, where he was on business. And after that, the first payment that was made in this case was actually wired from a bank in the state of Wisconsin. I think in this case, there are almost as many contacts with other jurisdictions as there are South Dakota.
But, of course, that isn't the test, is it, really, whether there's more contact somewhere else?
No, it's not. It's just kind of a curious development. In this case, the test is whether or not there was purposeful availment. And in this case, many of the internet cases that have looked at purposeful availment, such as Shamsuden versus Vitamin Research, are very similar to this case, and they found that jurisdiction isn't proper. In Shamsuden, there was a transaction involving a seller of vitamins over the internet who operated his own personal website, which purchasers could buy vitamins. In that case, the transaction was completed where there were two sales of vitamins in the forum stage. And the court ultimately held the jurisdiction wasn't proper in that case because the maintenance of the internet website along with two isolated transactions was not enough. And in that case, the court looked to the contacts of the seller with the forum stage, noting that the seller was a Nevada corporation with headquarters in Nevada. They had no offices in the state of Maryland and didn't engage in any manufacturing in the state of Maryland. In addition, there was no marketing in the state of Maryland. These facts are very similar to the present case, where the seller in this case didn't own any land in South Dakota, didn't own any offices in the state of South Dakota, didn't do any tangible advertising in the state of South Dakota. His advertisements were limited to newspapers in the Stevensville, Montana area, as well as the Montana Auto Finder, which is another local auto trader publication. And the facts are materially similar to this case. Another good case of internet sales is Carstetter versus Boss. It was a case relied upon by the circuit court in making a ruling in this case. And in that case, the court noted that you needed to look to the degree of interaction between the parties in order to determine whether jurisdiction was proper and whether there was purposeful availment. In that case, they again found that jurisdiction was not proper and was in violation of due process. They took note of the fact that the buyer initiated the email contact in that case, that the buyer paid for the shipment of the product, and that the seller didn't travel to the forum or did any other business in the forum. And these facts are also similar to this case, where all contact in this case was initiated by the buyer to the seller. In addition, as was the case in Carstetter, the buyer paid for shipment. And finally, there was no advertising in that case other than just the placement of the product on the internet, and that's also similar to the present case. Another good internet case is the Bichetto versus Hansen case. It's an unreported decision in California. It involved an automobile transaction that took place whereby the vehicle was purchased from the state of Wisconsin by a buyer in the state of California. In analyzing that case, the court noted, again, that there was no shipment of the product by the seller, and also that that was the only contact between the seller and the state of Wisconsin.
Are these cases all listed in your brief?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And when the court viewed whether or not jurisdiction was proper, I think another important thing to note was that the court went into a policy consideration, and the court noted that the buyer had to bear some responsibility for his transaction, and that while it was inconvenient that he had to travel from Wisconsin, or from California to the state of Wisconsin to litigate his dispute, he didn't view the product ahead of time. He didn't send anyone else to go take a look at the vehicle before he purchased it. And as such, he had to bear some responsibility, especially in light of the effect that too liberal a standard for purposeful jurisdiction would have on e-commerce. Because the court noted they didn't want to paralyze e-commerce by making jurisdiction too easy. And I think that's a valid argument. In addition, if you didn't analyze purposeful availment under these sliding scale tests, I think South Dakota's case of Ott versus Newsom is also a good case for analysis of jurisdiction. And I think in that case, it's easily distinguishable from the present case. This court found jurisdiction in Ott in a transaction involving 45 head of cattle, a transaction which was significantly larger than the present transaction, both in terms of volume and monetary value. In addition, in that case, there was much more contact between the seller to the buyer in the state of South Dakota.
Are you saying that the amount of the sale makes a difference?
Well, I think that it doesn't necessarily make a difference, but it's one thing that other courts have looked at. I don't think it's really important for the purposes of determining whether or not the defendant has availed himself to jurisdiction in South Dakota, though. I think much more important is the analysis in Ott of the fact that the mail communication between the buyer and the seller, or between the seller and the buyer in that case, actually was through the form of mailing of Iowa health papers to the state of South Dakota department, as required by South Dakota statute. And I think that's a far cry from the mailing of a mere unsigned purchase agreement into the state of South Dakota.
Were there other course of dealings in that Op case?
Was it
just a one-time sale?
I'm not sure if there was a course of dealing, I guess, in that case, but I know that the court also noted that after the transaction was completed, there was also a series of negotiations initiated by the seller to the buyer in South Dakota over disputed animals. And so I think that's also an important factor that distinguishes the present case. In addition, in that case, the Iowa defendant actually shipped the cattle into the state of South Dakota. And I think that those factors are significant in comparison to the mere mailing of an unsigned purchase agreement, which I don't think gives rise to jurisdiction in this case. Under the second prong of South Dakota's test adopted by this court dealing with whether or not jurisdiction is proper under due process, there's analysis of whether the cause of action arose from the defendant's contacts which were directed at the forum state. And I think in this case, the only activity that was directed at the forum state was the mailing of that purchase agreement. The fact that this item was placed for sale on eBay was no more directed at South Dakota than any of the other 50 states in every country across the world. And that, in that respect, any contact with the state of South Dakota is simply random, isolated, and fortuitous, and there needs to be something more in order to have jurisdiction. In addition, the seller in this case is a Montana corporation organized under the laws of the state of Montana with its principal place of business in Stephensville, Montana, a small town on the west end of Montana, and it doesn't do any marketing anywhere near the state of South Dakota. Its marketing is limited to the far western end of Montana. Except
on the internet. I mean, it markets all over the world, isn't it? Certainly your client intended to go beyond Montana when he puts it on the internet.
That's correct. That is the purpose of marketing on the internet. However, any contact is not directed by the seller. It's dictated by whoever happens to run across that advertising. And in this case, I liken it, like the other internet commerce cases or courts, to the Asai, or the Asai opinion of Justice O'Connor, the plurality decision in Asai, and that this is likened to placing this vehicle into the stream of commerce. And once it was placed in the stream of commerce, there was no control over who would view this website or who would make an offer on the vehicle. and that there must be something more in addition to the placement into the stream of commerce. In addition, under the third prong set forth for determining whether or not insertion of personal jurisdiction violates federal due process requirements, the acts of the defendant must have a substantial connection with the forum to make exercise of jurisdiction over the defendant reasonable. And the court has determined in order to decide whether or not jurisdiction or exercise of jurisdiction is reasonable, in large part is determined by four factors. That's the burden on the defendant, the interest of the forum in adjudicating the dispute, the burden on the plaintiff in litigating in a faraway forum, and the interest in other states in securing the resolution of controversies. I think that this transaction fails under this prong as well. There is a substantial burden on the defendant. The witnesses in this case would involve many of his employees, specifically the employee who signed the purchase agreement when it was sent back to Montana. And I think that that would have an effect on his business simply because he runs a small auto dealership with four employees, and he may have to close down business for a few days to get to South Dakota and litigate this dispute. The burden is also great on the plaintiff, however, because they are forced to litigate in a faraway forum. But that was addressed in the Bichetto case, the unreported California decision that I mentioned earlier. And the court noted in Bichetto that while the defendant was forced to litigate, or while the plaintiff was forced to litigate in a faraway forum, that was part of the responsibility he had to bear for his failure to actually inspect the vehicle beforehand or to enlist somebody else's services in inspecting the vehicle beforehand. And I think that prongs two and four in this analysis, the interest of the forum in obtaining relief and the interest in the other states in securing a resolution of controversy, kind of goes hand in hand. Because I think if we were to allow jurisdiction over a plaintiff based on a single online transaction, such as the one in the present case, we would run the risk of opening the floodgates to litigation in the state of South Dakota. Because I think under that analysis, it would be possible to have any small-time seller on eBay.com establish personal jurisdiction in the state of South Dakota based on a single transaction. And e-commerce is such a large thing. I know in the last decade, I've probably purchased 75 to 100 items myself on eBay, and I've had some of those transactions that haven't been satisfactory. And I think that if we were to allow jurisdiction based on that, we would open up a can of worms that we wouldn't want to deal with.
What about the issue that some, or the statement that some of these, like eBay and so forth, they have agreements in them themselves on how it's going to be litigated if there's any kind of a dispute. Do you know if that was ever the case or talked about in this case?
I don't think there was any forum selection clause, so to speak, I think is what you're kind of hinting at. But the problem with doing that is that you have many sellers on eBay that are just as unsophisticated as the many buyers that probably don't understand the concept of forum selection clauses. In addition, you have these personal small auto dealerships located everywhere that have their own website now that sell cars. And I think that, I mean, there's car dealerships in Phillips, South Dakota that have one employee and a website to try to expand their market. And I think to require them to have a specific form selection clause would be dangerous because that's something they don't, they wouldn't understand, they wouldn't think of putting in. But I think in this case, there was something similar to that. The purchase agreement that was sent to South Dakota was unsigned. In this case, the seller made sure he didn't bind himself before he sent this agreement into the state of South Dakota, and I think that's important to note. While there wasn't a forum selection clause, I think the seller was sophisticated enough to understand that he didn't want to bind himself. He wanted the contract to be signed in South Dakota and sent back so that he could bind himself in the state of Montana. Basically, this case comes down to one pertinent contact with the state of South Dakota, and that's the mailing of the unsigned purchase agreement to the state of South Dakota. Whether you analyze this under due process, in the international shoe, or the sliding scale, in e-commerce cases, the result is the same. Due process is not proper in this case.
Thank you.
Have you found, in your research, any case with as minimum amount of contacts as we've had here, which found jurisdiction on the part of the seller?
I have been unable to locate any jurisdiction in which a contact that was as minimal as this one was Some of the states that have allowed transactions over eBay to constitute sales have dealt with other situations. Typically, they involve shipping into the forum state or an offer to ship into the forum state, but I haven't been able to find any cases that deal with a single mailing into a state that equates to personal jurisdiction.
Thank you, Mr. Riggins. Ms. Woods, you have 10 minutes.
Let me ask you the first question, the same question. In your research, have you found any case that has established jurisdiction on as few a context as there are here?
There was one case provided by Judge Kern to the attorneys in this matter at the hearing. It was a Georgia case. I don't have the site. I have the name. It's Arrow Toys Stores versus Breeze, where there was a single purchase made through eBay.com by the Georgia resident. He brought suit in Georgia against the seller was a Florida corporation. And the court there found jurisdiction because they said that the website provided, I'm going to quote, a button to be pressed to contact seller in case of any questions so that they were reaching out. In that case, there was even a form clause giving Florida jurisdiction, and the Georgia court overruled that. And then in that matter as well, they made that single purpose made up less than 0.5% of that business's sales. But because they had advertised and reached out, the Georgia court said that they were basically reaching out to Georgia residences and they found jurisdiction. But that Thank was you. Provided by Judge Kern in this matter. However, she found that that case did not apply to the instant matter, and I apologize, I don't have my trial notes with me to know why she deciphered the two. But it would be my argument under that case that jurisdiction would apply. I wanted to touch also that Ott versus Newman, I think, is a great case that does give this court jurisdiction over the matter. In that case, it was the Nebraska resident who claimed, I had no other contact with South Dakota other than he sent the paperwork regarding the cattle's, I believe, vaccinations to the health department in South Dakota. That was his only contact. But at the time he sold those cattle, he was contacted by a South Dakota buyer who identified himself as a South Dakota resident. He knew the cattle were coming to South Dakota. Just like the seller in this matter knew that car was being purchased by a South Dakota resident and it was coming to South Dakota. So I think under Ott versus Newman, it would give South Dakota jurisdiction over this matter.
In that case, he also shipped all the cattle to South Dakota after he got the, he had to supply the inspections and so forth to the Department of South Dakota and got those approved and then shipped the cattle.
He made arrangements for the shipping. He did not pay for the shipping. And I would say in this case, although the seller did not pay for the shipping in this matter either or personally ship it, he did assist with the shipping. He gave the name of the carrier to the appellant in this matter. And when the carrier came to pick the car up, he assisted him with all the information on where the car was to go. So he did assist in the shipping of the vehicle. So I would say that that's not a big enough distinction to say Ott doesn't hold in this matter. The other cases that the Appellate's Council brought up that I did want to touch on is Carcetta versus Boss. And that was the other case that was in the actual eBay auction where the court said that Kansas did not have jurisdiction over the defendant in that matter. But that case can be totally deciphered from this case in that it was an eBay auction, number one. The buyer had requested the seller to terminate the auction and deal with him personally. And in this matter, the buyer or the seller had said, I will not let you bid on eBay. You have to contact me personally. So I think there's a big difference there. In Press Center, he wanted to terminate the auction. He made the auction go through the internet. And so I think jurisdiction is going to apply in this instance. And finally, the vitamin case, the Shashman versus vitamins. In that matter, the plaintiff, it was a patent infringement case is what it was, but the plaintiff had two friends purchase those vitamins for him for purposes of trying to obtain jurisdiction over that defendant. And the court didn't fall for it. They said, no, jurisdiction doesn't arise here because it's two purchases, and the client and the plaintiff had a hand in those purchases being made. In this matter, the buyer of the vehicle, he was looking for the automobile, but it's not like he did something to purposely avail the seller to the jurisdiction of the court. The seller did that. I have nothing further.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.